Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Hey, you guys, I appreciate you so much for listening. I just want you to know that. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 331, my discussion with Minneapolis-based theater artist Jada Pulley. But first, let's talk about Audible. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to get your account today. Audible has hundreds of titles and shows to choose from, all included in your membership. And every month, you use your credit to get a new book, one that just came out or was recently advertised by your fave celeb book club. Okay, so I may have bought The House in the Pines because Reese Witherspoon told me to, but you know what? So what? It was good. Check out something fun for yourself today at Audible. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up for your account today. So now let me introduce my guest for this week. In this episode of Yes But Why, I spoke to teaching and theater artist Jada Pulley about producing festivals, performing in shows, and all the fun they've been having being part of the huge theater community. So I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 331. Jada Pulley is dedicated to making improv an art form accessible to all. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
Yes But Why.
Yes, but why?
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 This is the Yes, But Why podcast.
What was the ways in which you were playing as a kid?
As a kid, I remember reading a lot. So just consuming all of these worlds that were created for me, like any like kind of like smart, lonely kid. I like hid myself in books. And it was a great time. I don't read anymore, so that's fun. Because I just love the real world so much. I don't have any room for imagination. I would read a lot when I was younger. And I also remember like playing within my like aunt's closet for like dress up, specifically to play like Destiny's Child with my cousins, and like we would always fight over like who got to be Beyonce. It's a mark of honor
for real.
And I was mentioning earlier, like, we were talking about how a lot of performers had audiences growing up. And I never had like an in-person audience of like people who I like held captive for my shows or like stuffed animals or anything. But I had in my mind a very captive and interested audience. I would like in my mind, I was like, YouTube was popping at the time. I mean, it still is, but it was like brand new and exciting. So I was like a content creator slash like singer. And I had all of these, like, I was just good at everything. I would do like these interviews in my head, like anything that was happening, it would be like, all right, well now Oprah would like to know. And it was cute and also made me think of like, wow, do I need an audience for everything? It had me like going through like an existential crisis as I got older, because I still had that imaginary world until honestly like a few years ago. Like it was just like something that I could like dial back into when I was just like, wow, this world is either boring or terrible. And yeah, anyway, imagination is great for me.
I feel like I feel like the YouTube, first of all, my mind is blown about the existential crisis of a YouTuber, because I'm like, whoa, like, you're right. That is a very specific, like, do I need an audience? Is if, certainly for the generation of people that have grown up where like everything's been filmed and everything's on the internet, like there has to come a time when they have to make a decision about like, do I want that or not? You know, it's like, because, you know, in my parent world, there's a lot of parents that don't want their kids on the internet. And then there's some that just put tons and tons of photos of them all the time. And yeah. So
baby has their own Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super intense. Clearly I'm on one side of it. I mean, my child is on the internet. Don't get me wrong. He does his own shows and I put photos up of him cause he's really cute. But at the same time, like I feel like if he at any point says, I don't want this anymore, I'll get rid of it. And I would never have created an Instagram for him. That being said, I am old, so I can hardly handle my own Instagram, never mind like also his. So like, I get that. But to bring it back to this idea of this existential crisis of a YouTuber, like this idea that like, do we need an external audience? Because when you were talking about like interviews about events that happen, I was like, I feel like that's how I handle like everything. Mm-hmm. You know, like as things are happening to me, there's the part of me that's reacting. And then there's the part of me that's sort of interviewing the person reacting. That's like, why do you think that you're reacting this way? That's very interesting. Okay. And I like here, you know, I've got both of these conversations going on where it's all like, I'm mad about this. And then it's like, all right, I get that you're mad about that, but like, how can you use the, you know, or any world event, you know, something happens like, okay, I hear what you're saying. You're upset that this has happened, but what are you going to do about that? You know, there's the like secondary voice. And I feel like that's almost like the interviewer, like we're talking about, like this person who's asking, you know, your YouTuber character in your head, oh, what do you think about what this thing that happened? I don't know.
Oh, totally. I feel like that's just kind of like internal monologues therapy. Like, I feel like my therapist is proud of me for having such self-awareness of like experiencing an emotion and then being like, or not then being like, at the same time be like, all right, notice what you're feeling right now.
Yeah.
Where are you feeling it in your body? Why do you think you're reacting this way? You know, it's just kind of a way to really be in touch with yourself. At the same time, it's a way to kind of objectify yourself, or not objectify is a weird word in that context, but like objective and like as in become objective about so it creates a bit of distance as well.
Yeah.
At the same time as diving really into it. It's like, I didn't expect to get this deep.
Well, you know, sometimes I really think that our childhood selves have a secret for us. And that if we can kind of identify parts of it that still feel like ourselves now, then sometimes, you know, that can help to digest something as we're older, right? So like even you talking right now about the idea of having, you know, your therapist is proud of you because you can process the emotion. My first thought when you said that was, but I wonder if the ability to process the emotions came after your involvement in theater and performance and whatnot, because, and I only say this because when I teach theater, I feel like that's the first thing I have to teach people is how to understand the way their body expresses things, because they're like, I can't act. And I'm like, everyone can act. You're acting right now. Let me explain to you what acting is. And then we talk about how their bodies feel emotions. And then I say, now, next time you're in a scene and you want to and you want your character to be angry, think about the spot in your body that gets tight or whatnot and try to tighten it or try to, you know, lean into whatever that is. And it'll help you go down that slide. you know, that's just kind of how I think about it. And after, so all this acting technique stuff has brought me back into my own head about like mm-hmm. appreciating and understanding my own emotions in that way. So when you brought it up, that was the first thing I thought of. And I wondered, like, do you think your YouTube, like as a child, the interviewee thing, you were already sort of like woke to the idea of processing your own emotions? Or is this older you looking at what you did and giving it a framework that you have now because you have a sort of a theatrical brain? Sorry, way deep. We're just like right in there. It's not going back.
I think I've always been like kind of really introspective. I was one of those kids that were dubbed an old soul. So it was like always in my head, but I didn't do theater growing up, like asking about like which chicken or egg came first, theater or self-reflection. I only got into theater. My very first introduction into it was, or like as an actor at least, was like my very last semester of college. But I do think with the reading is it helps like just kind of be aware, like, oh, this is it, I feel like it really like taps into like, because you get to tap into another person's psyche, it kind of gives you language to talk about what you're experiencing and just kind of widens your perspective in a different way depending on what you're reading, I guess. But I wouldn't say that I was devoid of like theater in that way, or like creative arts, whatever you call it. But I didn't technically get into theater until I was late. Although I'm always dubbed as a theater kid. People just assume because I'm so dramatic that obviously.
Well, I mean that the self-reflection alone and the old soulness of it all, like now that I'm an adult with a child, I understand what people mean when they say that to children. Whereas you're right, when you're a child, you're like, great, thanks. Whatever that means, like, or people would, my mom would say to people about me, oh, she's 13 going on 30, you know. And I don't know. I mean, I think I internalized that personally because I think my soul is 37 years old. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's how old she is. I'm a little older than that now, but I felt like when I hit that age, I was like, yeah, all right, this is it. And now I feel younger. You know how like, you know, you meet an 80-year-old sometimes and they're like, I'm so young. Who knows? Maybe that person's soul age is like 22. You don't know, right? Ooh. And so I wonder if like I'll just feel 37 my whole life and what that is. And to that point, since you were dubbed an old soul, do you think that you're an old soul? Like, do you feel older? Do you, when you were a kid, do you feel like you, because I definitely didn't feel like a kid. I remember having deep thoughts when I was little and people were underestimating me all the time. And I was always like, ugh, these people, they do not get
it. Yeah.
And I feel like that's what they mean when adults say old soul, but like, I really had, I don't know, heavy thoughts when I was a kid. And I'm like, maybe that's what that is. You know, what do you think? Mm-hmm. What's your age or your soul age, you think?
yeah, I was dubbed as mature and I felt mature just like being around like other people. And I started school like a year early. So I was like with people who are older than me just by that little bit anyway. But even those people, I was just like, what you're doing doesn't make sense. And I was always like, I liked talking to adults and was like often like the teacher's pet by accident. And I think now, I'm, depending on who you ask, I'm relatively young. Or if you ask someone else, I am ancient, because age is all relative. So it feels weird to like put a number on it, because like someone's experience of like 37, it could be like very different from another person's experience 37. It's like just like what is actually happening rather than putting this like random label on it.
Totally.
And yeah, I feel like how I feel now, it feels, I don't know, I feel like my frontal lobe is developed. I'm good to go.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's it. I mean, maybe it's like my brain just kind of fully cooked and I was like, I did it. Look at that. That's the brain now, you know? Yeah, because you're right. Like when you bring up the idea of like we are all, you know, age doesn't necessarily require anything. Like when I was 37, I was not married yet. And I had just gotten married and I was about to have a kid. I had a kid at 39. So I didn't have children yet. My whole like perspective on that is totally different now that I've had a child for a while. So yeah, but whereas one of my college best friends, by that age, her kid was, you know, 17. So like her experience of the world was totally different at 37 than mine was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't know. I guess in my mind, I just kind of always feel like you are who you are, like always. And I feel like this more now that I have my own child too, that like we are, when we come out, yes, you know, thankfully our frontal lobes have caught up with the rest of it. But at the same time, like me, the meanness of it, it's always been there, right? And like how I process stuff is just the way I do. In the same way that like I feel like when you say that everyone says that you're a theater kid, but you're like, but I only read books, and I guess that's theatrical. Realistically, I think it's just the way that we process information, right? Like creatively or analytically, right? So you're reading these books and you're taking in all the stories. You're like taking in the themes and the characters and this. Maybe when other people read books, that's not how they take it in. You know what I mean? Like maybe that's not what. And even when you were saying like, oh, I don't read much anymore, I was like, I don't know many adults that truly do have the time to do that much reading. But you're also actively involved in like watching and performing like active theater art that you are like creating sometimes totally off the top of your head, right? And I feel like that sort of takes the place of the reading in the way that, at least for me, creative process wise, you know what I mean? Like I could read a book and take in what this other person does, or I can, you know, take in a person creating improv right in front of me and deal with it in that moment. Right. So I see them as very similar in that way, in the way that it's just about your brain taking in the creativity and like processing it whatever way you do.
Yeah. Like honestly, I used to feel a lot of shame around not reading anymore.
Sure.
Because like one, it was just like such a big part of my little nerdy identity. And two, like everyone around me is like, or at the time at least, was like very intellectual and was always like, oh, I just read this. What are you reading right now? And I'd be like, ooh, I read a good graphic novel at the very most. I love graphic novels. I don't read them. I still don't read them. I just don't want to, I'm not trying to shade graphic novels. I think it's a wonderful art form. No. I'm losing myself in this tangent. I felt shame about it, but I still like watch TV and I go to theater, and it's just for some reason we have this like, or at least in my circles, we have this elevation of the written word as like the highest of culture. And I think all of the other ways of telling stories are just as valid. They might stimulate different areas in your brain, but just because it's not written down doesn't mean it's not important.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. 1,000%. Think about how much oral history there is just constantly. Like the idea of stories that have been passed down, like, or even like the idea of the power of stories that people tell one another and and what that is. Like storytelling is not just a creative thing. It's like how we live our whole lives. It's how we process everything. And I feel like, back when there were only books, that was the only, that's why it's cool. It's great. Also, and I appreciate this. I appreciate
the class thing, like from the very beginning. Like not everyone had books.
No, definitely. But not only that, what books are we reading, and like how do they make that decision that these are the books that we're reading? You know, like it's great that you know we've read this book or that book, but maybe there's 20 better that somebody wrote. It's like things like it's like Edison versus Tesla. You know what I mean? Like Tesla had some great ideas, but nobody knows who he is. Who's to say that like, you know, some of these great sci-fi, all the old school sci-fi stuff that people are like, I can't believe he was so right. Maybe there were 1,000 people that are writing these things. And like, we just happen to only know the one because that's what sort of came forward in the cultural, hey guys, this is the cool new book. Even like, when they're banning books and stuff like that, and you're like, in 100 years, are there going to be people who are like, oh, I've never heard of that book because it's not around anymore? I mean, maybe, we don't know, you know, like the idea of it is like, yeah, we soak it up, but you're right. We live in a world. There's so many other ways to soak up stories, like a million. Even television used to be 4 channels, and now it's 100 million of them, and people are making brand new stories, writing full scripts, getting groups of people to put them on for us, and then we get to watch tons of it. Like, that's great. How is that not just as good, right? And even to bring it to the last thing that you said about the class thing, think about things like Shakespeare, where like they had to specifically say, hey, there's going to be a section where people can just walk in and pay a penny. And that's what I want them to see my stories, right? Mm-hmm. I wrote this story. I want someone to see it. And I want not just you rich people to see it. Thank you for coming. But also the other people. Thank you so much. You guys are super great. Love the crown. But anyway, but the other people, I need them to see it as well. So like, stories are for everybody. And maybe books make people uncomfortable. They made you comfortable when you were a child, and you know, you're in a weird place with them now. Me too. Like, I've only just gotten back into like sitting down and reading a book. And I feel like I'm only doing that because now I'm writing. So now because I'm writing a book, I'm like, hey man, you better read somebody else's book. Like, you gotta put that up. In the same way. Yeah, right. It's like you gotta watch other people's improv shows if you want people to come to your improv show, right? So it's like that, you know. I don't know. I think you're right that there are a lot of cultural ways that we beat ourselves up for the way that we are consuming stories, but I think that every story is valid and interesting, and you know, some of the stuff is old and has enduring themes and good for it, and sometimes it's not. I mean, I can't tell you the number of books I reread in my, you know, early 30s that were like high school books, and I was like, what the hell is this? This is terrible. Why would you read this? Why would they make me read this? Like, you know.
I want to bring it like to access, because you were talking about like maybe there's all of these other people who had greater ideas than Edison, you know?
Yeah.
And there's, in my opinion, there's so many geniuses that just don't get their shine or their chance to be a genius because of, you know, all the different structures of oppression that is prevalent in our society. So I have found like so much joy and positive growth as like a human being in improv, specifically. So that's why I have kind of taken on like, oh, this thing is super cool. I want to make sure other marginalized people get to see this, and do it, because I want to spread that healing that I've experienced. And also, like, it's beneficial to everybody because, like, I don't know, we've seen so, like, even in improv, right? where you can make anything in the world possible, we still have this limitation on ourselves based on what we've experienced. It kind of fuels what we can imagine. And having different experiences and backgrounds and everything in there helps widen the pool of possibility. And I think everyone benefits from that. So that's why I'm my home theater is Huge Theater in Minneapolis. And I help run the current diversity and inclusion director. We run a jam specifically for Black, Indigenous, and people of color every month. And we always have new people coming in who are just like, what's improv? And they leave and they're like, oh my God, that was so fun. And maybe they don't take classes. Maybe they do. We've hooked a lot of people, but they're just like, that was a really fun time. Like a chance to like let my guard down and play and just be in community with people that have like a similar experience in me in this one regard, at least. And I'm also a director of the Black and Funny Improv Festival coming up in March, Saturday, March 22nd. And I started the Queer and Funny Improv Festival, which is not derivative at all. And that will happen later in the year, but I really value making affinity spaces, especially for people to have their first step into it. Because I'm ideally like, I love affinity spaces. Maybe I want them all the time, but like the reason that we need them is because the mainstream doesn't feel welcoming enough. You know, and ideally I want to have these affinity spaces, but then also creep our way into the mainstream. So that looks more reflective of our community.
I like it. I like it. I appreciate the idea of that. So this conversation sort of started through the idea of like access to storytelling. And I'm really fascinated by this idea of you providing an access, a way for people to tell their stories. I feel like that's really, really wonderful to like give people an open space so that like they have the ability not only to create the stories if they want to play in the jam, but also like, you know, they could watch it. And then be like, and then see stories that relate to them as well. Or alternately, see stories that don't relate to them. And they're like, oh my goodness, there's this whole breadth of experience that I had no idea about. And they can like take it in and understand. I feel like both of those things are reasons why people read. You know, they're like, oh, I read this book. It reminds me of me and my friends. Or I read this book. Did you know that people even think this way? Like, and so I feel like you're in the place of creating, to bring it back to this idea of like, you're not reading, but you're creating. Like you're literally in the space. You're like living in a book. Like it's happening. The stories are happening around you in the moment. And like you're, you know, convincing the people that they're in a good place and they can tell their stories. You know what I mean? Like, what is that if not what a novelist does? Like they get the people in their head or the characters. In this case, it's the people around you in your community. And you're like, tell me your story. I want to put it on this page. Like, and you put it out there so that people can experience it. And they're like, oh my goodness, I had no idea that this was even a point of view. Or, oh my gosh, other people are like me. You know, those are the two ways that we connect with books, you know, and yeah. I just love that you're creating this space and essentially, like I said, like creating your own story, or giving voice to the characters that exist around you in the world, and letting them, speak to that. When you're creating these spaces for other people, how does that make you feel creatively? Like, does the creation of these events fulfill you in a creative way in the same way that performing does? Or because as we mentioned before, like you were on your own when you were a kid, so like maybe not the most extrovert, or you know, maybe, I mean, how are you so getting these groups together and being social and like creating festivals? That's such a wild thing to be doing, festivals, like multiple.
I have a theory, because I always thought that I was an introvert growing up, but now, like, reflecting on it, I'm like, maybe I just didn't like those people. And they, like, I really, like, kind of grew into myself, like, over, like, college and, like, after, and, like, even doing improv kind of just, like, opened me up more to just putting myself out there. But I switch back. If you're going by Myers-Briggs, I like always am like, am I an I, am I an E? Like every time I take it, like that is the one part that vacillates. but I do, if I had to pick myself right now, I'm an extrovert. I love people and I love connecting with people. And I draw my energy from people, only people that I already like though. But it's still like, that's kind of what fuels me. So in creating these spaces, it's kind of just me being a little succubus. It's all selfish. Like I just do it for my own gain because I love those spaces. Like I love when other people make those, like I want the space to happen. So if I have to make a space, so be it. But I love being in those, just a space where people come together, united in some front to be joyful, I actually like sad prov a lot too. like it's also really fun for me. I love that exploration. So you can be joyful while exploring dark things.
Agreed.
Yeah. I think the creating those spaces does, it fuels me in a certain way, like in a kind of a social way, because a lot of the reason why I do improv is honestly just for the community. It's a wonderful community. I love improvisers so much. They're like the people who are like down for anything and can just like take an idea that you have and make it into something beautiful. They're so supportive and just funny. Like sometimes I don't like hanging out with improvisers because it's like, I can't keep up with your bits. God damn it. I'm not as funny as you. But this is great. Anyway.
Oh, bits. So many bits. Can't get away from the bits.
But I also so it scratches like a little bit of a different itch than performing, but I like make these spaces and then I'm like, well, you know what? I should perform too. So I kind of, like I said, I'm pretty greedy about it. Like I've started a few shows of my own, but I always cast myself. So I just like playing.
I hear you. Everything I've ever done is just for an opportunity for me to do something. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I want to do sketch comedy. Hey guys, I'm going to do a sketch comedy show. And they're like, really? Great. I'm like, yep. Like, that's a thing I do now, I guess. Yeah, absolutely. Why not? I mean, I feel like that's a very extroverted thing to do, to create an opportunity for yourself to take advantage of, right? And I feel like that's a good thing because it's like, why not? I'm excited by this. Like, let's create it, make it happen for everybody else, and then also, like, get to enjoy it yourself, right? Why not?
Thank you for your validation.
No, well,
I know a lot of people do have, like, I have a very, like, collaborative style. I'm not very, like, this is my vision. Mm-hmm. My way, get out of here. Which I don't know too many improv directors who are like that. For the listeners, Amy made a kind of...
Unfortunately, I think a lot of the listeners probably know who I'm about, but
I know some people are like, well, you're directing and playing in it, like that's like, it kind of can create this like really awkward dynamic depending on like how you go about it. Like giving notes to your fellow players is kind of, it's just awkward, at the very least. I think going about it in a collaborative way where I just ask like, hey, what did everybody think of that? And we all like give like notes on the like the form or like the group itself, rather than just like Tina. I don't know what you were doing in that last scene. And
Tina, yeah, what is wrong with you? Why? Get out of here, Tina.
Yeah, we love you, Tina. The Tina that we have made up in our heads to be our punchy flag. Yeah, we think
she's kind of full of herself, Tina is. She directed and she didn't ask for collaborative advice. Your vibe, though, is very collaborative. Like, you didn't present your, when you were talking about all the, like, festivals and things, you weren't like, I don't know if I've mentioned how I'm amazing, and let me tell you about all of the things I'm spearheading. Like, there's a way, there's a vibe, you know? And also, to a certain extent, like, improv versus sketch comedy versus stand-up versus theater, there's a lot of different personality types, and I find that they get shuffled into the creative crowd that works best for them, let's say. And you know, if you want to be like me, let me tell you all about me, and also I get to say all the things, well, stand-up is available, you know what I mean? Like, go right ahead and do that, and if that's the way you want to do it, please get it right up there. I enjoy it. Please, I want you to do that.
I used to be,
you know,
terrified of my stand-up, but I did my first stand-up set last year, and I freaking killed it. And then I was like, I'm never doing this again. I'm improv through and through.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I did stand-up too. It seemed like the right thing to do at the time, but it's like, no. Yeah, no, I feel similarly to you in that I'm like, I'm always down for collaborative. Like, I want to see what a group of us can come up with and like what we can create. And if my joke that I came up with isn't the funniest thing and you have a better punchline, great, let's talk about it. Like, let's try it. I can't tell you the number of, I did a sketch show for a long time, and there were a number of scenarios where like, the writer's room thought that the joke was the funniest thing in the whole wide world. And we were like, yeah, nailing this, so good. And then the actors perform it and they're like, but what's the joke? What, but what's happening here? And I'm like, we knew in the room, but right now I have no idea. So we need to reconfigure this. Like, you know, you just need to be open to the process. And if anybody's open to the process, it's improvisers, right? Yeah. It's all process. It's all like, let me have deep feelings about all, and you know, sad prof, which I think is a fun phrase. Like, you can be really heightened or you can be really low and quiet. Like, improv can be everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And as long as you feel that you have, as long as you feel trusting in the people that you're with, you can do whatever you want. And you can't build trust without a level of collaboration and accepting other people's ideas and like an outward showing of how you do that, right? Like, part of what I'm, as I mentioned before, when I teach improv, I've taught 101s, it's the idea of how to collaborate. There isn't really like, they tell you to share when you're a kid, and then like that kind of goes out the window for the rest of your life. Yeah. And you need to learn these skills. You need to learn how to work with other people. And weirdly, adults are the hardest to convince. Like, kids are much easier when you're like, okay, guys, we have to share an idea. Let's all work together on a single idea. They're just so in that world already. But with adults, they're just not ready for it. So if your brain's already primed for it, then, I mean, collaboration is, I don't know, key.
It's literally baked into the process.
Yeah.
Like in for 101, like, you know, like, yes, and you're like building like brick by brick rather than coming with a whole cathedral, you know? It's kind of, yeah, it's one of the literal foundations of the art form. So part of why I love it so much, and just explains why the vibe is right, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, as far as the art form goes, it's like the most sweet. I feel like I'm very happy to know that your community is so open, and that you have so many opportunities for all sorts of diverse groups in Minneapolis. Like, that's so great. I've heard wonderful things about Huge Theater. I can't guarantee that there's that at every improv theater everywhere in the world, but, or even in this country, but you know, like, I think the kernel is there, the kernel of like openness, the kernel of, and like earlier when I made the face about how there's occasionally a megalomaniac improv director, definitely happens. I have been privy to it. And, you know, sometimes they push an agenda that doesn't really allow for the true collaboration that, you know, is required and also is the magic of improv. And so I'm so happy to hear that, like, you have that like your experience is that. And, you know, I wanted to ask, you mentioned earlier that like going and finding this community and like getting involved in improv was this like life-changing experience, but you also mentioned that you were not a theater kid. So how do you get to where that is? Like, how did you even find it? If there's a kid listening to this right now who's like, yeah, I mean, I that sounds good, but like, where am I getting, how am I getting involved with something like that? How did you do it?
I recognize that Minneapolis, at least from what everyone has told me, is like a particularly nice scene to be a part of.
Indeed.
I want to explore more to like see for myself, just what's the vibe in different places. But the reason I say that is because the director of diversity and inclusion that I work with, John Gibertatios, he started the BIPOC jam, the Black, Indigenous, and People of Color jam. And I came in like to the either the first or the second one. I went to college in the East Coast, and coming back, having not necessarily liked the people that I went to school with, I was starting all over. So I was like just browsing on Facebook, and I saw this event for like a POC jam, and I was like, oh, that sounds like something to do, to make a new friend. Could not be bored of my house. And then they just hooked me in, and I just never left.
Nice. Wonderful. That's so great that the jam that you're now like excited about and sharing with other people was this great little community that like got you involved as well. Oh, that's so lovely. And you're right. I think Minneapolis is very special. Like, there's a lot of sweet towns that I have met people at, but you know, like as far as like what you're talking about, this like diverse group and like really having like a lot of, you know, connection and, you know, building so much. I mean, you know, Black and Funny Festival is a big deal. Like I have definitely heard about it for years, even before I met John online, and like, you know, the building of this community, the development of it has been important. And also like really like the effort is there and you can see that the caring, you know what I mean? A lot of places like, I feel like improv in a lot of places is built with this idea that it's going to be some sort of big money-making venture. And it's like, guys, come on. We might as well all be watercolor painters. Like, we're not doing this because someone's going to buy my painting. Like, I'm doing this for my soul. I'm doing this because I like being with other people. I'm doing this because it turns out that this art form, now that we've, I'm going to say cleaned it up, because I really feel like in the 70s, when it first kind of boomed, first it started pure. Viola Spolin, pure. She wanted to help children. You know, there was something about that. And that's lovely, helping children. But then everyone was like, yeah, let's make some cash. Let's do wild shows. And then it got weird for a while. And I feel like there have been so many people that have brought it back to this, like, no, this is an essential art form that doesn't need to be something that makes $1 million. It's just like, beautiful to watch, beautiful to experience, beautiful to like be part of on either side of it, to like just witness another person's creative experience. I can't tell you, maybe I'm the only person in the world who loves a level one recital, but I love them. I love them so much. There is nothing better than watching a person get their first laugh. Oh, so great. Oh my God. That's all. I mean, like, that's the, if there's a heaven, that's my heaven. It's just like people going up and getting their first laugh. And like, you see them like, oh, I did it.
I did that.
It's so crazy. I mean, even my child, my 5-year-old, made a joke. We were with some of my friends and he made a joke and everybody laughed. And he was like, yeah, you're laughing. I like this. He said out loud. And I was like, yeah. Like, I was like, yes, he got it. Look, like, it was so like this moment, you know. I don't know, there have been a lot of ups and downs in the improv world over history, and by history I literally mean like the last 50 years, and like, you know, just the way that each community is developed, like, there is something beautiful in Minneapolis. I'm glad that you're there and you're, you know, creating a community for people, and then even creating more festivals. You're insane. Because you're like, listen, I had a few months when I was sleeping. I'm not interested in any rest. I will just do more festivals. What inspires you? What keeps you going to keep making these rooms for people, to keep creating these stages and giving people opportunities? What motivates you to keep doing that?
I think for me, it's about connection more than anything. Like, there's two shows that come to mind based on what we've been talking about. One, I started a little, just a, like a random like three show, like Strangers No More, which I don't know. I hate to promote the game because I asked them for like an endorsement and they denied me. Or at least they were like, don't call us, we'll call you.
Oh, it's okay.
A, like, thoughtful card game called We're Not Really Strangers. And it's just a, like a discussion game, basically. And I take that game and I invite like an improviser who I really like, but who I haven't had the chance to really work with or get to know. And I like played that game with them and did improv based on it. And it was so fun. And it was just like an excuse to hang out with somebody who I thought was cool. And I love that story aspect of it, because we were talking about earlier about like having to have an audience. And I feel like I literally was thinking to myself, like, I couldn't just ask that person to hang out with me. Like, I need to there's the audience. Like, this is a show. And like, and there's a level of like validity that it offers. Like, I don't know. It's just something that I want to reflect on, but I haven't come to a full conclusion about. But I,
dude, I am so with you. What do you think this whole podcast is? Like, it's like, how do I make friends with other improvisers across the world? Oh, I'll start this podcast and then ask them to talk to me for an hour. Like, are you kidding me? That's exactly what this whole show is. And the idea of I'm recording it so there's an audience. I mean, yes, there are people that listen. Love you. But at the same time, like, you know, yeah, it's exactly the same. Like, I'm like just trying to create an opportunity to be friends.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, adult friendships are hard. And if you're not, you know, the other thing about it too is getting to know people outside of your own community is really interesting. Even just the like random, even the like little tidbits that we're kind of discussing where it's like, wait, you think the way we do it is different? Man, I'm dying to know what that means. You know, and all the like little parts, because we've only got our own perspective, right? So it's like, I'm like, yeah, Austin's a good town. Yeah, it's nice. I don't know if you'd like it, but I like it. You know, it's every place is got their own, you know, little quirks here and there. And it's just, I don't know, it's funny to find your place into it.
Totally. the second show.
Yes,
I can't bring up to you and then drop the second.
Totally.
I also started a show called Based on True Story, which is like very loosely inspired by playback theater. But it's about, for me, it's about connection, because it's there is a set cast, and it is an all black cast, like started by Happenstacks, but then we were like, oh, yeah, we like this. Let's keep it this way. And there are, there is like audience storytelling is like built into the form. Like we take different audience stories and then we do like an artistic interpretation of it. Some form of improv. And it could be like poetry or dance or like a normal basic improv scene or whatever. And I love it because it gets people involved that aren't improvisers and who would like never want to do it, or at least are scared of doing it. And they say that they never want to do it, but I will keep badgering them if I see them more. But it, for me, it is, I love being able to get the people in the room to be like creators in what's happening, and it just, you just get to know the person next to you. Like you, like if someone says a story, you're like suddenly like, I know you a little bit more, and you can talk to them after. Like the first show that we did, I bought snacks and like had a little reception after, because I was really like, we're all gonna be friends after this. And it happened to an extent, but I just wanted to close the loop on that. Oh, I'm speaking corporate jargon for no reason.
No, I like it. No, close that loop. No, I'm glad you brought up both shows, because we were talking about, you know, way effort you're putting in and like how you're creating in the community. And I totally distracted you when you mentioned the first one. So I'm glad you brought up the second one, or else I would have been like, wait, I distracted you. What was the second show?
That one is a monthly show currently. So first Saturday of the month at Huge Theater at 4 p.m.
That is Based on a True Story is the one that's monthly on the first Saturday. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, right on. Have you done, is it Strangers No More? How many times have you done that? Are you going to do that one again?
I would love to, but I was saying it was kind of like just kind of a off thing, because we, I don't know what it's like in other spots, but Huge has this lottery called Improv-A-Go-Go. So if you get selected from the lottery, which is like truly pretty random, you get to have like 3 show dates.
Right on.
So I got that lottery and I did that. But I haven't booked any other shows with it. But I did like tell the artistic director, like, if anyone drops out, you know, this will be real easy to put on. And she said, noted.
It sounds like a fun thing to go to like Edinburgh Fringe with as well. Like that'd be super fun. You just meet random people from all over the world and you like get to become friends with them. Like that seems like a super fun way to do it. Any Fringe, really.
I should, with the Fringe lottery for is for our Minnesota is coming up. Maybe I should submit. But anyway, inspiration.
She's like, my plate is full, but I'll take more.
Totally.
As far as the shows that you're creating, the shows that you're putting energy into building and the festivals and all the other stuff, I mean, how are you navigating your time? How are you making it all happen? Is working for Huge Theater your full-time job even? It's not, right?
It's not. I am not employed by Huge Theater.
Right. Oh, so, like, you do so much.
House manager there.
Sure. Yeah. There you go.
I have not picked up shifts in a while. but I have the key.
Yeah, there you go.
But no, my daytime job is as an operations manager for a nonprofit newspaper.
Yeah. So like you don't, it's not like you're 24/7 building these shows. How are you finding the time and like bandwidth to create these shows and the festivals and stay on top of building communities? Like how?
Mm-hmm. I think it helps that it's kind of where I get my social juice from. So like, as opposed to like work, play, like friendship, love life, whatever. Like I get my my social energy from doing these artistic endeavors. That kind of at least like condenses those categories together. But I don't know. People ask that question a lot because like apparently I'm really busy, but like I don't feel like I'm busy. You
know? Apparently I'm very busy. I mean, the list of things you say you do alone is a long list.
But it feels like fun. So I guess that makes it just, yeah. I still have my downtime. As like an extrovert, introvert, whatever, like I still need to just like have a day where I'm just like, all right, it's just me and my cat. We're done. But sometimes I find like those days, like a whole day of that, I'm just like, where are my people at? You know, it depends on the mood I'm in. So on such a day, I'll just end up back at Huge watching a show or something and hanging out with people in the lobby. So might as well make it into an event.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the idea of keeping it separate, of like having it be your fun so that, you know, maybe it doesn't feel like work. It doesn't feel like, oh man, I can't believe I have to make this festival. It's like, oh my God, do you know I get to make this festival? Right. Like, yeah.
There's always so much, like people just expect you to monetize your hobbies and I feel like that sucks the fun out of it.
Yeah.
Like if tonight, I don't get me wrong. If like someone wants to pay me for a gig, I'm definitely taking it. Sure. But it's just not, that's not why I do it. You know, I'm lucky, like having a stable like day gig pays the bills so I can go have fun.
Yeah. Well, no, I appreciate that too, because that perspective is really wonderful as far as like being able to embrace doing all the creative stuff that you want to do and like having that outlet, the social outlet and the like creative outlet all at once while you're also, but also having, you know, a day job to take care of, you know, paying rent or whatever. Like a lot of people, like you said, they're trying to monetize. They're like, oh, when are you going to quit your day job so you can be full time? This, it's like, maybe that's not how I can have my best life, you know? No. And why not? Like, in the same way that like, we don't need to be shaming people for not reading books. We don't need to be shaming people for having day jobs. Like, no. Whatever way that you are able to navigate your life and you can have, you know, create a fulfillment and be able to eat and, you know, live in a place. Hey, if you can do all those things, that's freaking amazing. Many people cannot accomplish all of those things at once. So if you can do that, don't let somebody else, some hater who is like, you know, telling you you're doing it the wrong way. We all have our own way. We build our lives the way it works for us. And, you know, I can't tell you, as I've become an adult, as I'm older, as I've gone through multiple theater scenes and cities and different groups, like you just kind of got to find the way that works for you and then just do that and not worry about these other people. Great. If you do it different, enjoy the way that you're doing it, right? As opposed to, you know, some people want to force you to do things their way and you're like, hey, you enjoy your thing. I'm going to enjoy my thing. It's fine. It's fine. Like, and I feel like to bring it back to like the fluidity of improv, I feel like that is a helpful thing that I learned when I was doing improv is this allowing people to do what they're going to do. And instead of being like, no, you're not doing what I wanted you to do, to be like, I see what you're doing there. And I'm going to add a little bit of something to that. Like, I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to change your life or your lifestyle, the way you want to live your life, right? I'm just going to decorate it a little bit. I'm going to just be part of that with you, whatever that might be. And I feel like the improv vibe, the improv philosophies definitely help to open your mind to allowing people to living their lives, whatever way works for them, right? That's another thing that, like, when I'm putting out this podcast, I find it very important to point out when people are listening, because people, there's this real thing about, oh, if only you could quit your job and do this full time. And that's not for everybody. It's just not. Some people, sure. Yeah, that's their path. They gotta quit their job so they can go on tour and do stand up and that's it. Great, do that. Or I want to be an actor. I need to quit my day job so I can focus all my time to do auditions. Great, good. That's for you, right? Not for all of us. Not the way. I personally have an ebb and a flow to my creativity. I allow it to be what it needs to be in the time. As I mentioned before, having the child has changed the way. I felt bad for years that I wasn't doing improv the way I used to. I felt like I'm not part of it anymore. I don't count. This is not who I am. But that's not the case. I'm just in a different path in my journey. And so I'm using my creative thing to focus on these wonderful, lovely conversations I get to have with great people like you. And then also, like, just taking online workshops, you know, has been a big deal for me now that I can't really go out. He's asleep in the other room. I can't leave. They frown upon that. And, you know, so I take my online classes. I got, you know, two workshops a week I'm taking, you know what I mean? Like, all this stuff just to be involved and do my own thing. And if somebody came to me and was like giving me judgment, I'd be like, okay, well, whatever, you know. I'm just so glad that you've, like, found this joy in doing the stuff that you're doing, and you're like, listen, my day job is great and I enjoy it. It does not bother me, and I can do this and do that and live in my best life. Like, yes, yay. I'm so glad for that.
Cool. Yeah. If you do have any rich people listening to this podcast, though, I will accept a benefactor.
We're going to get you a Patreon. Come on. For real. Just sign up for that, man. People pay you for stuff. It's crazy. I have friends that live off of that. It's insane. The rich people, they like to give out the money. Take it. Who knows? And like we talk and we've talked throughout, you know, Minneapolis is high on the charts of, like, cool theater, cool, like, space, cool place where you're doing arts. Like, it's very, it is both highfalutin and like on the ground, getting it done, new, brand new art coming out every day kind of place. So that's a beautiful spot. For anybody listening who's like, where should I move after college? It's a good spot. I'm just saying, you could move to Austin like everyone else is, but let's be honest, it costs a lot to live here right now. Don't do it.
Honestly, I didn't know where I wanted to move after college. I ended up, like, back in my parents' house, like, by default, but I would Google, like, best places to move after college, and Minneapolis was always on the list. Give me
a month. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's always been very cool. Like, I'm just saying, my whole life, throughout all of my different versions of theater, different groups that I was in, you know, people always talked about it like it was, like, an amazing spot. And only now have I been able to connect with people who are doing art there, like yourself and John, and maybe I'll meet other people too. Very exciting. But at the same time, it's like, it's great. I'm so glad that you have a great community. I'm so glad that you found a place and a theater that, like, makes you feel warm inside, that you get to, like, create projects whenever you feel like, you know, you're inspired to do that. I mean, that's the goal, I think. For real.
Come visit.
Yeah, definitely. I'll take my world tour eventually. He'll be old enough to to go somewhere soon. I only take him to visit his grandparents.
He has his own show. Like,
I know. He's got to go on tour. You're right. He'll bring the turntable and his 45s. Oh my God. All right. Final question. And then I'll release you to your evening. Thank you so much for all of your time. It's been wonderful chatting with you. What is the thing that you're doing for yourself to fill up your own creative cup? I mean, I know that you're creating spaces for people, but it doesn't even have to be, you know, like, oh, I'm writing a novel or whatever. It could be like, I'm watching this television show, or I knit, or like, I have a watercolor class that I go to twice a week. Who knows? Like, what's the thing that is rejuvenating to your creative spirit?
Interesting. I think consuming different stories in different ways. Like, I play a lot of video games, and I do believe it's the golden age of television. There's so many great shows out there.
Yeah.
And I name them. Also so much theater, even though I do end up at Huge a lot, so more improv than any other type. Form of theater.
It is.
But yeah, consuming it to keep, you know, getting that fresh perspective, or fresh noms, whatever you want to call it. But also just, yeah, being able to collaborate. So kind of like similar to what we talked about, whether I'm like directing a show or being in a show, I just love like the vibe that we have in terms of like, oh, that was great. I would have never thought of doing that. That was such an interesting move that you made. And just like being able to like learn from different directors, and then steal what I love most about them for my own work is just, yeah, just doing the dang thing. It's really nice. Yeah, I don't know if I have like a deep well.
No, that was great. That was great. Also, this is the last like question I'm going to ask you, and I've exhausted you with a lot of really deep talks. Don't worry about it. I was just, I love the idea that the collaboration of all the different people in your, you know, circles is something that really jazzes you. That like, and I think that that's something that, you know, any artist who's like, I'm doing the same thing over and over. It's like, find a different collaborator, find somebody who challenges the way that, who wants to create something in a different way than you do, and try to learn something from that. But the other thing, and you brought up the golden age of television. I also think when you said the stories of video games, I think that the idea of video game storytelling is something that is yet another artistic endeavor that we don't give the credit to. I think that there is something, I think that people who get into creating video games generally start with either a visual art background or a programming background, and then they move into storytelling from that. But they are human beings the way we are human beings, and all we want to do is tell stories. And so that's how it comes out for them. And the creative output of people who would not necessarily be in like a theater circle or like a writer's group or something, the idea that this is how they find a way to express themselves is awesome. So cool. And not even just like, now that there's the levels of like, you know, it's cool knowing how to do that programming. Number one. The next level is like, how are you doing the drawing and the 3D rendering and all the like details of a video game? Amazing. Really great. But then they create a compelling story that not only builds a world sometimes in 2 minutes, but also keeps you so interested that you want to keep coming back to it over and over and over again. Like, how are we doing that? You think that people who write a movie are great. They just did a 2-hour thing. This guy's got somebody who's been playing that game for like 16 years. Like, what? Yeah. They have captured that person's imagination for that long. We don't give it the credit it deserves. And I think video games is a great one. And that, again, people like, in the same way that like, I wish I could read more books, I wish I could play more video games. in the same way, because I feel like it is a creative medium that is not given the credit it deserves and is like just truly amazing when it comes to like the way people, you know, develop ideas. Like, so cool. So cool. You know?
Yeah.
I'm just so impressed with the way people do stuff. And between your providing places for people to create, from festivals to jams to shows that they can be in, I know that you do too. You just love it when people are creating new things and have the opportunity to let their stories that they're brewing in their brains come out and put them out for all of us to enjoy. Like, it's just something really beautiful about it. And I'm so glad that, you know, we get to be part of that stuff.
Oh, well said.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry. It's occasionally I go on for my own tangents. So, Jada, thank you so much for being a guest on the show, for chatting with me, for getting really deep in this discussion of, you know, creation and how we are creative and what inspires us to do it. Like, thank you so much for being with me and for being on the show and telling your stories.
No, it was really fun. I want to keep talking more. I mean, like, this is one of those things that like give me energy, you know?
Yeah. There you go. I'll have you doing your own podcast in a minute.
Somehow I've managed to resist the call for this long, so I don't know.
Yep. Live theater is for you. I can tell. All right, good. I feel like that's a solid end. I feel like that's a good end. This is the end.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.